Steve. We appreciate it. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And we have rolled in the portable couch for our friend and show therapist, Dr. John Duffy. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Very good. John, a couple quick questions. Question number one. We just had Jimmy Crane in. He's an actor. He's a comedian. He's got a one-man show. And his story, I'm sure you heard part of it as you were waiting in the PPG paint screen room, is that...
Good job.
Thank you. So Jimmy was explaining that he was having a run where things were not quite going his way, and he was finding himself very, very unhappy.
Right.
And his therapist said, you need to have a baby. That'll turn things around. You'll have a baby, and boy, everything will just be roses all of a sudden. I'm curious, is that a normal thing for a therapist to recommend is for a patient to have a baby?
I don't know Jimmy's therapist,
yeah.
And with all due respect, I'm sure that there is something singular about Jimmy's situation that would suggest that.
Oh.
On the whole... No, that is not what we would typically say.
Yeah.
Typically, we'd say, get your house in order and then have a baby, because we cannot count on an infant to solve your issues.
Oh,
or,
yeah.
Or a 4-year-old or a 10-year-old. That this is a big burden for a child to take on if you are struggling.
Interesting.
I think it could make things worse.
I was thinking the same thing.
Definitely.
Because it would be another, for somebody who's struggling, another complication, right?
Well, we're all parents. It's a really stressful time to have a baby, right? You know, this is something we are completely unfamiliar with. We don't know how to take care of this little person.
Right.
We don't always agree with our spouse or a significant other about what to do. It's probably not the best time to think like this is going to help me.
Right.
It's more like my goal is to be intact and help this person for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My other question is, and I asked you, I don't know if you'll remember, but I asked you this about a year ago, a year and a half ago in a similar case. There was another instance of a school teacher, a 28-year-old school teacher. This took place in Arizona. She had a sexual relationship with one of her students, a 13-year-old student. Sent him some crazy texts about how much she loves him. Sent him some lewd pictures of herself. All right. So I will ask you the same question I asked you off the air a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
The profile in these women is almost always identical. And they're always very attractive women, which makes it even stranger. Because usually when the tables are reversed, it's very scary-looking, creepy guys. But the women tend to be very young, vivacious, attractive women who are willing to put their own families on the line for a student, for a young kid.
Yeah.
Why is that the pattern?
Right. So there's no doubt in my mind that there are unmet emotional needs in these women that arrests their development. Otherwise, they wouldn't be drawn to somebody who is, in some of these cases, 12, 13, 14 years old, right? So that there's something aberrant in that alone. And typically, I don't want to overgeneralize here, but that has something to do with her relationship with her father or her stepfather or both. And that's in the few cases I've worked with. I've worked with a couple situations that were similar to this, didn't go as far as a Mary Kay Letourneau or this recent case.
Yeah.
But could have for sure if we didn't resolve some of these issues from childhood that arrested their development. Oftentimes it involves sexual abuse.
Oh.
And so if your initial sexual experience happens when you're that age, you tend to kind of arrest at that age and be drawn to somebody around that age.
You just freeze at whatever age that took place.
Yes.
At.
So when you hear arrested development, it's not just a really funny show.
Yeah,
that actually
funny.
Is really something that happens. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this the same thing, although conversely for some for women who prefer men that are like their father's age or older?
For sure. For sure. In a far more adaptive way, right? You know, this can be something that works for both parties, whereas if it's really maladaptive and you're drawn to somebody who is inappropriately young, inevitably gets you in some kind of trouble.
But take me through the thought process, John, because these women, they know that first of all, their careers are on the line. Second of all, they know that they could end up in jail. So what would a woman who seems to be a fairly intelligent woman, they've reached their teaching and, so you go, there's got to be some smarts up there.
Yeah.
Why do they put that all aside? Do they know that what they're doing is wrong or not?
I think on paper, they could. So there's two sides of the brain, right? So one side of the brain is going to tell you, I know this is wrong. I know this is wildly inappropriate. There's no way I should make a single move in that direction. But there's this primitive emotional side of the brain that doesn't really follow that program.
Yeah.
And so at some point, it's not a lot. It's very few of these women, and some men, more men probably, yeah, if we're being honest,
yeah,
reach this tipping point where I know I have this great life and I've created, even with all the trauma I went through when I was young, I've created something beautiful out of this. I'm married, I have children, I'm a teacher, and yet this kid somehow taps something in my psyche that is a tipping point for me, and I cannot now stop myself from acting on it.
Wow.
All right, so raising kids nowadays, I was surprised with some of the sex questions I got when my kids, mainly Dylan, were younger.
Right.
And I answered, and I didn't make it seem like a big deal.
Right.
And now I feel like when we're parenting children, we almost have to tell them about certain predators out there, like a teacher who may be showing you some extra interest. I mean, things have changed now, and we have to start talking to our kids earlier and earlier, don't we?
Parenting has changed radically in just the last few years. I think about, I wrote my first book about 9 years ago, and
The Available Parent.
The Available Parent. And a lot of it was about, like, hey, if you're present and available and there for your kid and your ego is in check, you're in a good space. Now there is so much a parent has to know that we didn't have to know just a few years ago. So we all have older kids, but if we were raising 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds right now, we would have to be armed with all sorts of information. We would have to know, like, oh, you have to be careful about boundaries with adults that you are trained to trust, right?
Yes.
Things like that, you know, and we need to talk about sex at a much earlier age. I was getting a haircut the other day, and the stylist, who has a 6-year-old in kindergarten, came home and said, "Mommy, we had the bad kid drill today," which is the school shooter drill.
Wow.
And so she had to talk her child through, like, yes, your locker is close to the door, so the shooter might see you first. And so, you know, they have to talk through what you would do in that case. Meanwhile, mom's trying to contain her own emotions while trying to contain her daughter's as well.
Right.
So there's a whole host of things that parents have to know and be really informed about that we really didn't have to know a whole lot about.
We'll talk about that more in just a little bit. Dr. John Duffy is here. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and a 20 on WGN.
Clinical psychologist, life coach, parenting expert, friend of the show, Dr. John Duffy is with us right now. We spoke real quickly about your first best-selling book, The Available Parent. You have a new book coming out. Can you give us the name of it? Yeah, every
yes.
time we ask.
The title of the book is Parenting the New Teen. The subtitle, we want to allude to the idea that the teenagers have stretched on the short end and on the long end, and that there's so much more that we as parents need to know to successfully guide our kids through these years. And the adolescent years are long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, you mentioned prior to the break about the bad kid drill that this little kindergartner got, and the
yeah.
mom was talking to you about it. It does sound scary, but don't you think arming our kids with information makes them less scared?
I think it's the best bad idea we can come up with. You know, I really do, because we do have to let our kids know this is happening, right? This pops up on notifications. They talk about it amongst themselves. I know kids this young are keenly aware that school shootings are happening. And I work with kids who have these school phobias. And in large part, it's because I don't know that I'm going to make it out today. I'm working with parents who have those, who have that anxiety. When they drop their kids off at school, I'm going to have one last look because I'm not sure that this day is going to end the way I want it to, you know, and every day. And I don't remember a single day like that.
Yeah.
I can tell you guys, right, are in the same boat. So, yeah, I think it's empowering to give kids something to do. I don't love the name, you know, bad
yeah.
kid drill. That kind of puts kids in a position of being vigilant for the bad kid and
yeah.
labeling some kid bad, as opposed to sometimes people do really, really aberrant, odd things. We are going to have a plan for the rare occasion, rare possibility that that might happen here.
Emergency drill. Couldn't it just be called that?
Oh, yeah. Like you know, a tornado is probably not going to happen, but just in case, let's have a plan.
Right.
Yeah.
John, I've told a story that in my grade school, they started kind of easing into teaching kind of sex ed, and there were a handful of parents who said, oh, no, my kids aren't ready at fifth grade or sixth grade or seventh grade to hear this. I imagine that must go on at a school that decides to do these sort of drills, right? There's going to be some parents who go, you're scaring my kid even more by putting him through the drill.
Absolutely. There are, I don't think we can name the district in the area that doesn't have school board meetings debating whether this is okay. The drills and the sex ed classes and when to have those. So now there's some discussion about moving those down a couple of grades. And I tend to support that as long as it's not heavy-handed and you know, and real graphic, but to start that discussion early is probably really healthy for kids.
Kids are talking nowadays, and you're right, we almost have to start educating them and talking to them younger and younger. It's Pride Month. It's June. I know that there are a lot of kids out there that either haven't come out to their parents, but maybe they have to their friends.
Yeah.
What can we talk about with that?
Yeah, so that happens more often than not. Kids feel way more comfortable coming out to their friends than their parents. So kids have told me a couple of things lately. One is you get this designation LGBTQ. So I'm working with this she goes by she, and she's transgender, and she said, somehow we've all gotten clustered together. I don't have much in common with a gay guy, you know? And so I'm not sure that the cluster works very well. But also, people come to me and expect, because I'm transgender and I'm out, that I know everything about this. And she likened it to if somebody in my class loses a parent and we go to the wake, we expect that kid to know what grieving is about and how they're supposed to do that, when in fact this just happened to them.
Yeah.
And her point was, for almost any child going through any of this coming out stuff, this is a process and we're not experts at it yet. We're still working it through ourselves. So let's have a discussion. Ask me questions. I might know the answer. I might not know yet.
Right.
And so be patient with me. I'm trying to figure this out just like you are.
I would imagine kids that fall under this category, whether it be LGBTQ or none of the above, have more battles with anxiety or depression. Suicide is probably up.
Yeah, the numbers are staggering. They're absolute. I mean, you know, every single study suggests the same thing. And so the clarion call, I think, to friends, to parents, and to the kids who are coming out themselves is, we really have to take care of these kids. We cannot be in the dark about it. We can't say, this doesn't please me as a parent. I wish you were cisgender and would just go along with the program, because these kids are at enormous risk, multiple times more than their straight counterparts. So we have to go out of our way, not just to accept them. And this is something I've learned from some kids, because the word acceptance suggests something along the lines of, yeah, okay, you know, it's, we'll deal with it, instead of like, we embrace it and we know you are who you always have been. This is just some new information we're finding out about you.
Right.
You know? Right. It's important.
When one of my kids was going to daycare, there was two guys that adopted two kids, and it was very normal for my kids to see that families come in different shapes and sizes.
Yes.
So hearing you say it's easier for kids to come out to their peers and their friends, it's because I feel that generation right now is more accepting, and it's the parents that are still kind of old school, if you will.
Absolutely. The cue we can take is from our teenagers and sometimes our tweenage kids, like our kids in middle school. Kids are really, really accepting and matter of fact about this stuff. You know what I mean? Like, there is no label. There's very, very little, if any, bullying that I've come across around these issues in the last decade or so. And if we parents can kind of pay attention to the way kids treat each other, it's really no different than they would treat any other kid. So to your point, Wendy, that is where our learning curve can take a speed.
So there's progress, but there's still a long way to go.
Especially for our generation.
Yeah.
And in fairness to our generation, I think we have to work through our emotions about, like, this isn't going to go the way I anticipated.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to be different.
We have time for one quick phone call. Scott, this is Dr. John Duffy, and we don't have a lot of time, so go ahead.
All right, I'll be brief. I listen to you all the time. My question is, we are, you know, let's say a child, like you said, I'm just coming out. This is new to me. How do I handle it? What about the child who says, I don't know how to handle this. I'm straight. I don't agree with your lifestyle, but I'm going to be accepting. I'm not going to be rude to you, whatever. But I still have my viewpoint that I don't agree with that lifestyle.
Right.
How do we treat those that side of the story as well?
Well, I think that there's a couple of challenges. I think for straight kids who do have some moral or religious issue with that lifestyle, part of it is to really consider, and I've worked with some kids, Scott, to your point, who feel that way, and some of them have decided, until I really clarify how I feel, I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to hold off for now, and I'm just going to kind of observe these kids, how I feel about this, and trust that my point of view, like everybody else's, is developing over time. Not that necessarily they're going to change their minds or feel less so. They may feel more so as time goes on, but to allow that to kind of ferment and solidify for them, as opposed to kind of coming out anti and against out loud, because sometimes that doesn't work for those kids. And now, Scott, to be honest, some of those kids who are anti-LGBTQ kids, they're the ones who get marginalized in a little bit. You can really put yourself in a really bad position amongst that generation that is very open-minded to these things. So I think it's important to kind of guide our kids toward modulating their response and really thinking about it for a while.
Right. Can I say one thing real quick as well?
Sure, go quick though, Scott.
As far as the older generation, and I know this is going to sound silly, my parents got a new smartphone. They have a hard time understanding it. That doesn't mean that they're idiots. They're just not tech savvy. Same thing with this. The older generation, they don't understand this. So I don't think that the gay community or even straight community, we shouldn't start judging people because for 60 years of your life, you're told one thing. Now let's just call this, okay, boom, this is an explosion. That doesn't mean they're bad people. It means that, you know, all of a sudden they're supposed to change immediately. I don't think that's correct.
No, but they need to try to understand as opposed to just saying, I don't understand, so I don't like it. Aren't your parents trying to learn how to use their phone?
They are, but this is, I said that would be kind of a poor example. This is a moral issue. If the older community, let's say their religious beliefs or even just society's beliefs that they were brought up on, immediately changes. And you got to admit, in the last 10 years, it immediately changed. So now we're just going to flip this coin and say, you need to accept. You need to accept. I think we, straight community, gay community, whoever, shouldn't we be giving them the same respect that they want as well?
Scott, we thank you. We're out of time. We got 10 seconds to answer that, John. Thank you, Scott.
Perhaps it is a moral issue, Scott. I'm not going to disagree with you on that. It is also a mental health and wellness issue for some of these kids, so there's some urgency on that other end as well.
And thank you for calling, Scott. We appreciate all opinions here because that's what we do. Dr. John Duffy, where can people find you?
You can find me at drjohnduffy.com. Everything about me should be there.
And the new book comes out when?
Should come out in August or September early.
All right,
we'll be talking about that.